I watch cinema or watch films or watch television, I think, like, God, I wish I was collaborating with actors and actresses where I could actually sort of just have a walk-on role and just go, like, hey, what's happening? It's a fantasy, I guess. As far as music, there are people that I would love to collaborate with. A lot of them are, like, free improvisers, because I really find that to be a kind of a practice of music that I'm always really enamored by, particularly musicians who devote their entire musical life to playing free improvisation and being really serious about it. And there's a lot of language in it that is kind of shared and agreed upon. And I have played with a lot of these people, but it's its own genre, it's its own world, and I find it to be really politically attractive, because it is, it's all based on where there is no leaders, and it's non-hierarchical, essentially. And I like that a lot, but it's this kind of collective consciousness that always has appealed to me. So there's people in that scene. I mean, certainly people like Evan Parker, who's been on the scene since the 60s, and he's still here in London. And I have sort of played with him in a couple of different contexts, but nothing where it was really sort of just the two of us playing together head to head. I think I would like to play with, I'd like to do some music with Lana Del Rey.
Wow.
I just think her records are really interesting, and I know a lot of them have a lot to do with just sort of the production value, and so I guess it would be not just Lana Del Rey, but I wouldn't mind sort of playing some guitar music sounds in the context of the music that she's been making.
That would be awesome. I would love to listen to that.
Yeah.
I would love to listen to that.
Make it happen.
I'm on it, Thurston.
Put the word out. Yeah, I mean, you know, next time she comes to Charleston, tell her, you know.
Well,
I'd love to go to Charleston. I mean, West Virginia is pretty cool. Yeah. I don't know. When I think of West Virginia, it's just like, it just sounds like a really romantic kind of world. I guess I equate it with just my years spent in, like, I spent so many times in the sort of the Southeast when I was a child. I lived for a while in Tennessee and Alabama and Florida and a little bit around Georgia and stuff. But yeah, and traveling from the Northeast to the Southeast, going through West Virginia at times, it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Well, you're definitely invited. We're an open invitation, so we would love to have you here.
Absolutely.
And we got.
You still have record stores and books, secondhand record stores and bookstores.
Yes.
A few, yes, and not nearly as many as we used to, but there's a few that are really good. I'm sure you would be happy. Actually, it's funny. I mean, I know you.
I'm not buying anything these days, but I know what you mean.
But I mean, I know you like to frequent record stores and secondhand stores and bookstores.
Oh yeah.
But I was going to say, Fred Sonic Smith was born in West Virginia, maybe 47 miles from Charleston in Hartz, West Virginia. And Patty Smith has played here several times at Mountain Stage, and she actually, Fred Smith was inducted into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame a few years back. And Patty Smith, she accepted the, induction.
Yeah. That's totally awesome. I mean, I can't think of anything for me personally more iconic than to have Fred Sonic Smith serve on your stage.
Yeah. Well, and Daniel Johnson.
I talk a lot about Fred Sonic Smith and how just that whole aesthetic of his presence and his guitar playing and his sound and where it kind of informed me just to the degree where I realized that at some point in time I needed to have a band called Sonic Youth. And so I certainly write about that. You know, he's really integral, to the story. Never met him, but I saw him play. I saw him play once.
Well, you became good friends with Patti Smith, though, right?
I worked with her, and I know her. Yeah. And it was after Fred had passed away, but I had, I certainly saw her quite a bit in the early days. And then I remember seeing the one time I saw him play was at a New Year's Eve concert in 78 or 79 in New York. It was right before she was kind of deciding to leave the business and become a mother, and he was on stage at the end of the gig when they were all playing My Generation. Everybody smashed everything up and left the stage, and it was just the two of them together on the stage, kind of playing this really linear, cool feedback together. And I knew who it was. I realized like 90% of the people in that audience really had no idea who that guy was. I knew who it was.
Yeah.
And that was big news for me. I was like 18 years old.
That you usually ask this question, but what was the first record you ever bought?
Oh man, well, the first record I ever bought with my own money. I kind of remember having my mother buy me a record or two. I do believe the first record I bought independently with my own coin was In a Gatta Da Vida by Iron Butterfly.
That's a classic.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I listened to it a lot. And I listened to it a lot because it was my record, you know. And it's like, you know, it was like I owned that record. I was going to play it to death. And I wasn't quite sure I loved it or not, or liked it. I mean, I liked it In a Gatta Da Vida because it was just kind of audacious, right? I mean, it was five-long record of solos. But, yeah, I just played that record. It was my record. And, I remember being with my older brother, and my mother bought me a record, and he said, "Oh, this one's good." And I didn't even know what it was, and it was Their Satanic Majesty's Request by the Rolling Stones. It's a 3D cover on the front, and I remember like looking at it, and the script on the record was such that I couldn't really tell who the band was. I thought maybe it was the Rolling Stones. I wasn't quite sure, but I was that young, and I would play that all the time too. There's a sound on that record where there's like a baby crying at the beginning, and I remember playing that record at one night when everybody was gone, and when that baby crying voice came on, I remember it just scared me to the bone because I wasn't quite sure where it was coming from. And then I realized it was on the record. I was like, wow. Hey, you'd sort of expect guitars, bass, and drums, and vocals. You don't expect like a baby crying. And so, that kind of blew my mind.
So since you brought up the Rolling Stones, who is your favorite? The Stones or the Beatles? And what's your favorite song?
Oh. You know, that's sort of like choosing your favorite child or something. But I would say the Beatles. I would say the Beatles only because I think as songwriters from the very beginning, they were impeccable. And they also had... There was something about the Beatles that was really spiritual that I don't really find so much in the Stones. And the Stones wrote some great tunes. The Stones were like blues rocker guys who, you know, their management said, like, if you really want to compete with the Beatles, you're going to have to write your own songs, which they did, and they did it pretty well. You know, they kind of had it together, you know, and, you know, that they were the sum of the parts, you know. I mean, it's like, that band together was fantastic. I mean, when Jagger made a solo record, it wasn't really something that you were cared about so much, you know, but in the context of the Rolling Stones, he's something else entirely, isn't he? So, I mean, that's one band that sort of is like that. The Beatles were different because I think Paul and John and Ringo and George all made really significant statements outside of the Beatles. And that's, you know, something to be said about that. I think they're kind of, maybe I would give them the upper hand in that choice, I guess. Yeah, my favorite Beatles song would be, I think it would be, you know, I don't know, I mean, it could be something like, I'm trying to think song on a song like "Let It Be" is just like it's just incredible.
Yeah.
But I see "Let It Be" as being a real more of just like a Paul song. I'm trying to think of a song that has a more of a Beatles kind of like more of a group effort, and it could very well be something like a song like "All You Need Is Love." You know. Fantastic song.
There is no wrong choice. There is no wrong answer.
There's no wrong answer, is there?
Yeah,
and
no.
The Stones, Stones, forget about it. Satisfaction is probably one of the top three rock and roll songs ever written, you know? No doubt. You know, it's a template for just about almost every incredible rock song after it, you know? It's the way it is.
Hey, wait, Support for WTSQ is provided by Montani Mechanical Group, plumbing, heating, cooling, refrigeration, and electrical services. More information regarding everything they offer is available at montanimg.com and by calling 304-410-0239.
Underwriting for WTSQ is being provided by Festival, supporting local restaurants and artists October 10th through the 17th during Festive Fall. featuring locally made goods at the virtual Harvest Art Fair and fall flavors to go during Taste of All. More info and menu items at festivalcharleston.com/events.
Support for WTSQ is brought to you by the Purple Moon, showcasing vintage, mid-century, and modern treasures. Located in downtown Charleston at 817 Courier Street and online at thepurplemoon.com.
7:21, and you are listening to 90% 90s, 10% of the time. My name is Heather Johnson. I'm joined in studio by Mr. Tom Sloan.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
I want to say a quick thank you to Montana Mechanical Group, Festive Fall, and Purple Moon. If you or your organization would like to become an underwriter for us here at WTSQ, please email us info@wtsq.org.
And someone will get back to you, and I promise it won't be John Michael Early.
He always says that. Yeah. I mean, unless you want to hear back from John Michael Early, then we'll make sure he's the one that gets back in touch with you.
Right.
Because, you know, we're volunteers here, and if somebody asks for something like that, then we do our best to comply.
Exactly.
And it's now my mission in life to introduce Thurston Moore to Lana Del Rey.
Oh.
Because, yeah. I mean, how amazing would that collaboration be?
Yeah, you've got to. You've got to do it.
I need your emailing skills.
I don't know. I don't know. I've had some pretty good luck. Well, maybe
that can be yours and mine. Yeah. Next collaboration is we can come up with the email to send to Lana Del Rey.
Get Lana Del Rey and Thurston Moore together.
Yes, yeah. We can be the matchmakers for that musical collaboration.
Sounds like a plan.
I don't know what it is about these gloves. I feel like I have to talk with my hands. Yeah. Like I'm Mickey Mouse or something.
Well, they're purple. They're very, yeah. Like doing shadow puppets. Or, you know, like.
And then another thing, just going back to the interview as well, mm-hmm. choosing songs for this playlist was like trying to choose from favorite children as well.
Exactly. If you were to ask me what my favorite Sonic Youth or Thurston Moore song is, I couldn't tell you. I mean, there's so many. And it was like questions too. It was really hard. I mean, I've been a fan, like I said, since, you know, mid-80s. And, you know, I'm sure I've thought of millions of questions in my head that, you know, had I have the chance to meet Thurston Moore, what would I ask? I mean, I'm sure I've thought about it over the years. But once we got the okay for the interview, I could not think of a single question.
Wow.
I want to give credit to some of our fellow DJs. I'll let you do the honors.
But. So thank you to Dan Taylor, Roger Young, John Siebold. Am I leaving anyone out besides you and me?
Everybody else was there in spirit, I guess.
Everyone else was there in spirit, but we definitely...
And thank you to Maya Ross.
Thank you to Maya Ross and Emily Bean.
Yeah, Emily Bean.
We had some great questions. And he really, answered those questions, and one just seemed to flow. Like, we had them all in order.
Yeah.
And then he brought up the Stones, so then that was just like, boom, okay. Well, since you brought up the Stones, let me ask you this question for Mr. John Siebold.
Yeah, there was a lot of nice, easy segues.
We didn't
really have to do a whole lot of talking. He kind of... did most
great.
Of it for us, but yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to let you guys listen to Thurston Moore some more.
Let's do it.
Here is part three of our interview with Mr. Thurston Moore.
Okay. Well, going back to Lana Del Rey, are there any newer artists or releases?
What's my favorite Lana Del Rey song?
What's your favorite Lana Del Rey? But are there any newer artists or releases that have caught your ear?
My girlfriend and I, Emma, we have a record label called Daydream Library Series, and we've been publishing music and art books for years, but we decided to do a record label just so we could release music by this Afro-punk group here in London called Big Johnny. And Big Johnny are fantastic. I mean, they've been around for a few years here in London, and we saw them play when they were supporting The X, you know, the anarcho-punk band from Holland.
Right.
They were friends of mine.
Well,
I went to see them playing. Yeah, and Big Johnny opened up, and we just, were astounded how great they were. Yeah, so I love them. I think that, you know, the record we put out is called Sistas, S-I-S-T-A-H-S. And they have a new record coming out on Kill Rock Stars soon. And then they have a single that Third Man put out that just came out where they do a cover of a Solange Knowles song called Prince.
Nice.
Really cool. I like them. And funnily enough, another band that I really like is called Trash Kit. And it's these three women from England, different parts. And they all play all these different other bands here. And funnily enough, I discovered them when I went on tour solo, making solo free improv noise guitar music with the X. It was a bit of a package tour. And I met them, and they were playing, and I became friends with them. And they're great. You know, they're really good. I recommend them. I listen to a lot of more just like completely marginalized weirdo experimental noise music and stuff. A lot of jazz, you know. There's a lot of the young players sort of coming out of the jazz continuum that I like. There's this contrabass player who's been playing on a lot of different sessions, and he does his own work under his own name. Luke Stewart. He's fantastic. I mean, if you look for Luke Stewart recordings on Bandcamp, you'll see that he's on a bunch of good records. And there's a whole coterie of people that he plays with in that scene that are all good. You know, there's this great saxophonist, James Brandon Lewis, who has a couple of records out. His work is really, really good. Really, really good furthering of jazz idioms. So I like a lot of jazz music. There's some hip hop. There's a lot of good hip hop out there, but I don't really follow it so much. I just sort of come across it on social media sometimes. I'm just like kind of. I feel like I'm just like so not up to date on like who's doing like the killer hip hop tracks, but I do hear stuff.
What about the new Public Enemy album? Have you listened to that yet?
I read and listened to it. It came out the same day here as my record. I was really happy about that.
Oh yeah.
You know, because I feel like a real good synergy with Chuck. You know, as Chuck D and Sonic Youth kind of worked together a little bit back in '89, and yeah, I still keep in touch with him just through social media, and you know, I sort of floated a few things back and forth with him. He's nothing but righteous, you know.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I think his record, from what I can gather and the little bits I've heard, is just completely out there and killing it, you know. So I definitely check that out. But yeah, sitting at home, I sort of, you know, I kind of engage with just like the silence, the sound of the daily life. And I don't find myself playing records as much as I used to. I do like records, and I buy records, and there's a lot of things. Yeah, it shouldn't come in here. Yes. A lot of aesthetic interest I have in records that go beyond just listening to them. You know, just sort of the artfulness of them, and just, you know. But I find myself feeling like I don't really readily sort of play records the way I used to. Maybe it's because I've been writing so much, and I've just been needing this kind of isolation and the silence to write with. You know, and sometimes I put a record on just in reaction to like the neighbors thumping around upstairs. You know, yeah. I find myself putting CDs of like classical music. You know, like beautiful classical music, which I've become much more sort of interested in hearing and learning from. And my father was a classical musician, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of incident for me. And so I find myself going towards that. I mean, I listen to anything and everything. You know, we have like a bit of a secondhand record store and bookstore here in London that we go to. We put our name on. And I hear things all day long when I'm there. You know, just records being slapped on, stuff like that.
Right.
Well, when you were describing By the Fire, I loved how you said pop rock nuggets.
Sonic Top Rock Nuggets.
I love it. Does the current musical landscape need to change, do you think? Or do you think that the mainstream culture will eventually find rock music again?
Say that again?
No, you're fine. We're hitting you kind of heavy this afternoon. So do you think that the current rock music landscape needs to change in order to grow? Or do you think that mainstream culture will eventually find rock music again?
I don't really buy into the whole sort of competitive situation there, like rock music has sort of lost its kind of cultural profile, and it's been sort of kind of overcome by, say, like electronic dance music or something, or like just I never really thought of it in that competitive light. In fact, a lot of my attraction towards getting into music and rock music was like working in areas that I thought had no agenda or concern to appeal to the mainstream anyway, and I was more interested in experimental music. And you know, punk rock at first was all about creating an alternative to the mainstream control of rock music anyway. And of course, punk rock sort of became somewhat compromised by becoming new wave and being part of the whole mainstream anyway. But that was, it didn't really matter. To me, it's just like, whatever you call it, I mean, it's just like, creative music making is always going to sort of be acknowledged if it's genuine, whether it's acknowledged in the mainstream or not, shouldn't matter, and if that's somebody's goal to sort of become to become recognized in the mainstream, then God bless them, go for it. It's no big deal. I mean, it's like it's a dignified thing to do. Some people become more studio musicians and technicians because it allows a bit of more stability in their music career, and But I don't think rock and roll as a genre necessitates being popular. And that's why I always liked it. I always thought rock and roll was a radical kind of music. It was a bit of a rebel music, and it was a music that was sort of for youth culture that felt at odds with the expectations of the standards of society in the first place. So for me, it's just like, if there's some influx of populist interest in rock music that equals what it once was, that's fantastic. That's great. But I don't think it's anything worth having to try to accomplish. I mean, Black Flag had that song, like, was it like writing the mainstream is such a lame dream or something like that? It's true. It's like you work in the context of being purely creative without having to sort of compete in the mainstream. So I speak for rock and roll. I say this. In a way, it's like with the scene I was in New York with like punk and post punk and no wave and noise music. The idea of being accepted in the commercial world of music was rather kind of corny, It was just kind of, actually people who became popular made money from doing what they did, whether it was like somebody like Madonna coming out of our scene in the early 80s or, we found it to be rather, it was a little embarrassing. it was kind of uncool.
Right.
I mean, it was changed, like when Nirvana became Nova in like early 90s, things were changing, and it's like, it was like nobody begrudged that situation, but I think it created a bit of a distorted model for a lot of young people who saw that as something to work towards. And I think certainly Chris and Kurt and Dave felt the same way. Like, that certainly wasn't on their agenda or their intention, but, you know, they took it in stride, and they kind of, you know, they kind of won that lottery big time, and a lot of it had to do with just kind of their music was so great, you know. But, I mean, at the same time, they kind of believed what we all believe, that there was a lot of music from our scene that was really great, you know. But they kind of galvanized all the cool aspects of what was going on at that time with our scene and like underground American music, and it got capitalized on, you know, and it was great, you know.
Well, it changed the landscape forever.
Such a success to see a band playing that music in the context of what was being played on, you know, commercial radio and television, MTV and everything at the time. It was just like, thank you, mm-hmm. you know. But we didn't really see it as, you know, being a zeitgeist thing that would sort of change, you know, change the world. But, you know, it did. And that, you know, I will always be grateful for, you know, that happening, you know, in our scene. That was very, very cool. But again, it wasn't something that was, it wasn't the intention, you know.
This question really isn't a current question, but because since we can't play live right now, but are European audiences more appreciative of live music than American audiences? In your opinion?
It's hard to say. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I found when I moved here to London, and I found the European circuit a bit more welcoming. And I felt like when I would tour across the USA, I felt like maybe what I had been doing for so long had been decoded to such a degree that there was a bit of a ho-hum kind of attitude about it.
Right.
And it's a little different because in the USA, it takes a lot more work to sort of tour because of the distances between venues, cities, and towns, and states. Europe is a smaller situation, and you can sort of bang around from place to place a bit easier. It doesn't take hours and days at a time. But I don't know if that answers the question. I don't really think so. I don't think there's any real borders or boundaries for how audiences react or deal with like artists. There might be a difference in sort of regional kind of you know, appreciation for certain artists. I think maybe the fact that I had been around in the States for so long, it was kind of like, maybe I felt like I probably didn't have the exotic flavor of something that would be coming over from England or from Europe or somewhere. And maybe it's the same thing over here, like, you know, as an American musician coming out of the diaspora, like New York music, you know, when I play like in somewhere in Europe or even here in London, that has a certain patina to it that adds to like maybe the energy. So, you know, there's always that element.
It's crazy toll, and how does your mirror grow? You better watch yourself when you jump into it, 'cause mirror's gonna steal your soul. I wonder how it came to be my friend. Someone just like you has come again. Never, never know how close you came till you fall in love with the diamond rain. he's here to stay. The mirror's gonna crack when he breaks into it. Never, never be the same. Look into his eyes and you can see why all the little kids are dressed in dreams. Wonder how he's gonna make it back when he sees you know it's make
Support for WTSQ comes from The Wine Shop, featuring an expansive selection of wine, craft beer, and artisan cheese. Located at the Capital Market and online at facebook.com/thewineshop.
Support for WTSQ is brought to you by Element Federal Credit Union. Element is a local member-owned financial cooperative that welcomes all West Virginians to join the credit union revolution, no matter their story or where they come from. More information about Element membership, including products and services, is available at craftbanking.org and on Facebook by searching Element FCU.
Support for WTSQ comes from Lola's Pizza, a quaint cottage eatery serving Neapolitan-style pizza prepared in a stone hearth oven, with cocktails, tap craft beer, and outdoor dining. Offering lunch and dinner Tuesday through Saturday, with brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Located at 1038 Bridge Road in Charleston and at lolaswv.com.
7:45, and you're listening to WTSQ LP 88.1 FM. The status, the status quo. I love it. I just love it. Thank you. Huge thank yous go out to The Wine Shop, Element Federal Credit Union, and Lola's Pizza. Thank you to those organizations for helping us here at WTSQ. If you would like to become an underwriter, you or your organization, email us info@wtsq.org. So, of course, had to play a cover. It's 90% 90s. To play a cover. So we just heard Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs with their cover of Diamond Sea.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Oh, I love Canada.
I mean, I love the original, but yeah, that cover, incredible. I mean, well, Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs do amazing covers in general, but
yeah, they
Carano. Well,
yeah.
And you play them frequently, so
I do. Yeah. I have a soft spot for Carano.
Yeah,
I really, really do. Don't go anywhere, because after 90% 90s, you've got Two Guys, One Show with John and Roger. Then you have Scarberry and Company, and at midnight you have The Alternative with Jeff Long. So we have one more part of the interview for you guys. I kind of feel like we saved the best part for last.
Yeah, it's kind of the conclusion, but it's very, very important and very informative. Yeah.
Current, timely. Very,
exactly. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, without further ado, here is the final part of our wonderful interview with Thurston Moore. Here we go. So as an American... Go ahead.
To answer your question, I've been asked this question before. Truthfully, I don't really feel there is that much of a difference culturally between the USA and the rest of the world and how audiences respond, really, to tell you the truth.
So as an American living abroad, really, seriously, tell us what you think about the current state of affairs over here.
Oh, well, over here, it's having that distance a bit, it allows you to have some, have a bit of a cushion away from the daily mania that is in the news cycle in the USA, which I appreciate, because it has ramped up to such a degree. And so there's a little more contemplation over here about the lunacy that has been going on.
Yeah. That's a great word.
Well, I mean that's pretty much the impression every inch of journalism has over here, that it's basically a lunatic asylum, and it's a bit of a hijacking of a once sort of dignified situation, and there's always the realization that the fact that it's an administration that that never won the popular vote in the first place, and had orchestrated this takeover in order to pretty much strip away a lot of the social welfare of the citizenry, in order to sort of focus more on the banking of the corporate demographic of the country, and so that's very obvious across the UK and Europe and journalism, and it's certainly obvious just from seeing the decisions that are made and the policies that have been put forth to strip away the Affordable Health Care Act at a time when people necessitate such a thing more than ever in the history of the country. It's just like, it's basically a crime scene. And so...
Agreed.
That's the impression, that is over here across the board. I mean, so... As an American over here, I mean, you get no sense of pro-Trumpism. There's pro-conservative and there's even pro-Republicanism as far as like the historical legacy of the Republican Party. But I think a lot of the perception is that the current administration really has nothing to do with that legacy. It's its own thing. It's its own animal. It is a complete farce, of an administration. And it really needs to be dismantled immediately. And there's a lot of concern about the very obvious motives of voter oppression.
definitely.
So,
it's a scary time.
I mailed in my vote 3 weeks ago.
That was my next question, actually. Well,
thank you.
Thank you.
This year more than ever, I mean, it's so important for everyone to vote. I mean, it's, I can't remember.
No, for me, it's just like, I'm a bit of I'm a bit of a Green Party / kind of anarchist, socialist, progressive-minded person. Very, very left. Very, very hard left. That's just my nature of thinking. It's all about, for me, when I cross paths with people in the streets in the USA, 99.9% of the people I cross paths with, I feel, have a desire to sort of live in a harmonious world with each other. And I don't really sort of feel that I'm crossing paths with all the hate speech I see online. And, or that's being sort of modeled by, by the illegitimate president. And so I don't really see that kind of hate and divisiveness and bigotry. I don't feel like I come across it all that much. And I know it's out there. And I know it's sort of, I know there are people and families that sort of have that as their ideology, but I rarely come across it. And when I do, I just feel like it's a bit of a minority. And so I just feel like it was so deceptive 4 years ago, because I think the country was really led to believe that there was absolutely no way in hell that kind of ideology would ever sort of come into power in the way it did. So I think most people just accepted the fact that, like, it's not going to happen.
Right.
And first of all, Hillary Clinton is going to win. She's 80% up in the polls 2 hours before the polls close. And so it's like, there's just, it's like, if you didn't want to vote for her or the Democratic Party, you didn't really have to, because she was going to win anyway. Well, that was a great deception. And I don't really feel like that is going to happen again. I think everybody is making sure they're going to go out and have their voice heard. And they're coming up against a lot of sort of suppression. I mean, it's the only country in the civilized world that I know of that allows people to stand in line for 15 hours just to cast a vote. That's just like outrageous. I mean, people in England and in Europe who see that are just befuddled by how that could be happening in modern society. But it does. And so we have to sort of get past this.
Yeah.
So my vote was, I'm really interested in having voices that are concerned with like progressive ideas of allowing everybody to have free health care, to really look at focusing on the health of the planet. And those voices I hear coming from newly, recently elected congresspeople that I find really admirable, who are really interested in the welfare of every citizen in the USA. So when I hear people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who has such a high profile, or Ilhan Omar, or Aliana Presley. I mean, I think these voices are extremely strong and intellectual, smart, forward-thinking, completely allowing for a dialogue and debate between every person of any ideology or race or creed or color. And these are the voices that I want to have come to the table and be invited to the table. And so I can only sort of support the ticket that would allow these voices in, as opposed to the other ticket, which would prohibit entirely them from even speaking, and so for me, it's a very easy decision.
Definitely.
Same.
So
we're all in agreement.
All I need is a All I need is a cot and a hot plate and a little turntable.
Done. Well, done.
Yeah, well, definitely next time you're allowed back in the States.
After this interview, man, it's going to be tough, right? I don't know. You never know.
Well, no, I mean,
I'm coming back for the holidays. I want to see my fam. I got my 26-year-old daughter and my 92-year-old mother and all this good stuff. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'll be emailing Lana Del Rey as soon as we're off the phone.
Hell yeah. keep me in touch with that one. Sure.
Well, thank you so much, Thurston. We really appreciate you taking the time. It's been an honor to talk to you. I've been a fan.
Cool, thank you.
I've been a fan for 35 years. So, this is a dream come true. So thank you very much.
We really appreciate your time.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate it, too.
Yeah, and we'll have to send you a care package somehow, a WTSQ shirt and sticker packet. We'll get an address for you.
XL.
XL.
Extra large.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be the next question. All right, well, thank you. I really appreciate it. You have a wonderful day. We'll keep in touch.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Thurston.
Peace. See you guys.
Bye. Okay.
Another Nazi attack.